From Milieu Media Group, this is Sons and Doubters.
An honest conversation about the times when faith is difficult and doubt is easy.
We're your hosts. I'm Luke Bronner.
And I'm Aaron Hale. And this is Season 1, Episode 3, Joy with Latifa Phillips.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sons and Doubters.
We had a chance this week to sit down with Latifa Phillips, who's someone whose music I have admired from a distance for a long time. Aaron, she's a friend of yours, right?
Good friend. She's
great.
Can you
kind of tell us who she is, what she does?
She is the almost the female version of me. She is
terrifying.
Yeah, that is really terrifying.
What's she do?
She's a singer-songwriter. She sings and plays and writes in the band Page CXVI. And they retune hymns, and just a phenomenal band. If you haven't checked out their music, you should do so. Page CXVI. She's also has another band called The Autumn Film, and they've put out some albums in the past.
Fantastic band.
And then she just finished working on her first solo album, which in a project she's calling Motospira. And it's really, really good. I've heard some of that, and it's beautiful. She and her husband Reed live in Colorado, in this really cool old church that they've turned into a studio, and she's a producer and works with a lot of artists doing records, and just a really, really creative, amazing person, good friend, and she and her husband are amazing people.
You know, so. I'm one who I've followed all of her bands for years, but never really knew her story until we got to sit down and chat with her, and it was great.
Very moving story. This conversation was really good. I know there were times where I was crying. I didn't want to look at Luke, so I don't know if he was crying. But it's a moving story. It's really, really special, and we're so glad that she told it. We're excited for you to hear it. So here is Latifa Phillips.
Hi.
Hey, girl.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yeah. Were you? It's not visual. It's just audio.
Yeah, just audio.
Oh, shoot. I didn't have to, like, get ready then.
You got all gussied up.
Well, no. I mean, I, like, put proper clothes on.
Oh, dang. Well, we're naked, both of us here right now.
You only podcast in the nude. That's classy.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
we're real podcast purists.
Yeah. We like to do the podcast right. Okay. So, you know, this is a podcast about doubt.
Yep.
And we like to hear people's story, and the reason we're doing the show is because, you know, everybody goes through doubt and has questions, and no matter where they are in their faith or you know, lack of faith, whatever, I think everybody kind of goes through certain times where they're questioning things. And so we want to just walk alongside people and say, you know, you're not alone, and here are some stories of people who have been there or are there or, you know.
Well, the reason being, people have those doubts and questions, but we haven't quite created a safe venue within which for them to deal with those things. And so our constant struggle through this whole first season has been questioning why the church is not as safe a place as it should be for people to come and wrestle honestly. And so that's part of our hope with this is just to kind of create some more open, honest, authentic conversations with people. So
it's like a continuum of, like, questions to severe doubting, but you're kind of covering the spectrum of people's experiences in faith and doubt and their life and circumstances and how that lands an impression of what they believe in that time.
Yeah. And just kind of how they walk through that in faith.
And it's not something that has to have like a pretty little bow at the end.
Well, you know me, I'm all about pretty little bows, Aaron.
I know.
I have 8 bows in my hair right now, but you can't see it because it's on video.
Well, it can have a bow if that's, you know.
You've got 3 more than Aaron does. That's impressive. Yeah.
It can end with a bow if that's the truth, you know. But sometimes
I hear you.
Well, you know how Christians are. And so
we're the worst.
We're just the worst. But like we were just talking about how, you know, Christian art seems like always has to
resolve.
Resolve has a resolution, you know. Even like you know, Christian music has like, there's a lot of doubt, and then all of a sudden, like, the bridge comes in, and it's like, but we know that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Every Christian song that starts on a six ends on a one.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
Get ready.
Good. We want to linger on the six for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, and I know that's hard, not as a Christian, to not try to wrap it up.
I was actually going to say, I feel like as I get older in my faith, it's easier for me not to use a bow, because the reality of, I think, the world being broken, not saying that God's not good or isn't powerful, but that the world, like, I think people confuse the gospel a lot with health, wealth, even if that's not their theology. I think they live that theology a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that as you get older and you realize the realities of the world around us and God's promises aren't specifically to do with, like, my personal health and wealth, you know, mm-hmm. being awesome my whole life. Like, I think it's easier to accept that there might not be a bow here and now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's still things to be grateful for and things to appreciate, things that are beautiful, but there's a lot of pain. And there's a lot of pain for people that doesn't go away until they die.
Yeah.
You know?
We were talking on a previous episode about how sometimes we gauge if we are in God's will based on those things. You know, we think that if something's going wrong, if we're suffering, then we must not be going down the right path, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is being Americans. I think culturally, we have fed, like, if you work hard enough and you do the right thing, your life will work out. It's kind of embedded in the idea of the American dream.
Yeah.
And that also embeds entitlement. So if I do the right things, not only will and should it work out, like, I'm entitled to it working out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have adopted a lot of those cultural ideas into our faith, even unintentionally.
Yeah.
So even Christians who would say, health and wealth gospel, no way, that doesn't line up with my theology. It's still the theology that they live, even though it's not maybe what they would write down on paper and say they believe it.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with, honestly, the doubt and the anger pieces of faith. Because if you're expecting God to deliver a certain thing because you think he promised it to you, if you do X, Y, and Z, well, yeah, that's going to make me really pissed about not getting what I thought I deserved. Because I thought you said that, you know? Yeah.
God becomes a liar real quick.
And that's that's the place where a lot of people will plant their flag in the ground. It's like, well, God lied to me, so I plant my flag and I don't believe that he's real. And that's when we talk about doubt turning into certainty, or turning into, you know, going down a dangerous path and turning into cynicism. And that's why we want to talk about these things, is to show people, you know, there are stories of people who have been down this same path, and you know, it's not the way you think it is necessarily right now, you know, the darkness that you feel right now.
I think what we would really love is to kind of hear your story, a time maybe that you just experienced this doubt and trial and difficulty and kind of had to walk through that in faith.
Sure. Well, I think that, and I think a lot of artists are like this, like scientists, I think we're kind of naturally curious people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that I know for me, I'm a big question asker in general. So a perfect example would be, literally, I came to faith at 5 years old at a VBS at this all-Chinese charismatic church I grew up at.
Nice. Not all Chinese.
Well, yeah, minus me and literally like 6 other kids from one family.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, like my dad was Muslim, and my mom, before she met the Lord through the 700 Club when I was a baby, like at 3 a.m. So for all those doubters of the 700 Club. She was into like crystals and new age theology pretty big time before that. So like, I think we have a lot of spiritual curiosity in my family history, but I remember being at VBS and saying the prayer to myself and accepting Jesus and it being like a genuine, you know, conversion experience. And then literally like 20 minutes later, I asked one of the VBS teachers, this man, I said, "Hey, so if God made me and he made Jesus, who made God?" And I'm like 5. And he looks at me and he goes, "We don't ask those kinds of questions here."
Oh, man.
So luckily that actually didn't like totally derail me. I was just like, okay, you know, like I just will ask that question to somebody else. So I think I've always been a wanderer. You know, it's why I'm obsessed with outer space. And that's why I love science fantasy fiction. I love the what if. And I love asking, like, okay, that could be true, but what about this? You know, like, I just had a conversation with a good friend last week. All my days are bleeding together. About, like, the Bible being literal, you know, and the reality of, like, we can say we know something for sure, but the truth is, can we really know anything 100% for sure?
Yeah.
Seeing as like we're flawed and we're always looking at it from our own personal perspective through our lens, no matter what.
Sorry, I was just going to say, like, even just like taking something infinite and like something that has an infinitesimal, like dimensional, like, you know, and trying to squeeze it into our own three dimensions, you know, and then saying that this is truth and it's very clear, you know, it's like, seriously, you're that certain about something that you cannot even remotely be able to understand.
Yeah. I mean, like, here are the things I'm certain about. Is that myself included? Humans are the worst. Like we can be great, but like we're all really messed up and we're all really flawed and we hurt each other like crazy. I mean, Reed and I have been together. Today's actually our anniversary. Yay!
Oh, happy anniversary! Sorry to take you away from that.
We've been married 6 years and together 9, and we still hurt each other, man. And we've like declared in front of our friends and families that we're going to love each other and be kind to each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like humans are, we're flawed. And I know that for sure. And so also I do believe that we are made by something powerful and wonderful and creative, which would be God. Mm-hmm. And I just think the idea of us, like you said, being able to pinpoint or understand, like putting God in essence and like in a box of understanding, I think that's really limiting, and I think that that could potentially be damaging to us, you know, because we start deciding who God is and what he says. I think he's given us things, so we definitely have, like, large ideas, you know, but, but yeah, so anyway, this is all really general. Let me be more specific. So I, you know, came to faith at a really young age, and we weren't allowed to talk about our faith in our house growing up, really, because it was a real sense of tension. Seeing as my dad was Muslim and my mom was a Christian and my sister, who's 4 years older than I was, is also a Christian. And so the girls just kind of went to church together on Sunday. That's kind of what we did. I remember my dad would have clients come over to the house from the Middle East and we would like hide the Bibles, hide the crosses, hide any, like we couldn't wear any shirts that had Christian ideology on them.
Wow.
And so it was kind of like we were secret Christians at home, but open Christians to the outside.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I learned to explore my faith outside of my house pretty quickly because it was something I wanted to talk about and something I was interested in. And so I found a lot of friends that I could talk with about it because I was curious. And so it wasn't like at home is where I really explored that stuff. At home, it felt like I didn't know how to reconcile because growing up in Texas as a Christian, and then we ended up switching from that charismatic church to an all-white 5-point Calvinist Presbyterian church. So it was really like opposite ends of the spectrum as far as theology goes and church experiences. I somehow received the message growing up, you know, that your dad's going to hell because he's Muslim.
Hmm.
And I actually had a couple people say it that clearly.
Golly.
As I got older. But I remember even as a kid being totally freaked and like falling asleep, begging God to save my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then about every other day, I would slip in a few extra prayers to make sure I was saved. So I'd like re-ask Jesus to come into my heart. And like, you know,
covering your bases.
Yeah, exactly. There was something really real for me about wanting to like secure my place in heaven. And I just felt insecure about it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I had to keep, you know, covering myself, if you will, in prayer, even as a child. There was a real fear of hell. And I don't think that's what ultimately drove me to faith, but it definitely was a real part of my faith experience growing up in Texas. And I'm not saying all Texans are like this. I love Texans. I love Texas. I have a lot of love for the state. But there is something.
She says as she's talking to two people in Texas right now.
I know. Isn't that the worst?
You no good.
But yeah, so I think that's kind of interesting to think about. And then that kind of, if you fast forward to my senior year of high school, took me to one of my worst moments, I think, when my dad and I were sitting. I remember it was after church one Sunday. We were sitting at the kitchen table, and he looked at me, and he was pushing me. And he said, "So you think if I die, I'm going to hell because I'm a Muslim and you're a Christian?"
Oh, man.
And I remember sitting there with so much anxiety. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, like, I wish I was, you know, my 33-year-old self sitting at that table now, but I was 17. And I remember feeling like this is the moment where I either have to kind of like deny God or deny my earthly dad kind of thing.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It is terrible because I didn't have a concept at that time about what I really believe is God's loving heart towards his people.
Sure.
But I told my dad yes. And he didn't speak to me for 2.5 months.
Really? Wow.
And we lived in the same house. And it was really painful. And it was really damaging. And it was really destructive. And now that when I look back on it, I think it's really counterproductive to how we as Christians are supposed to really love others.
Yeah.
And I still kind of grieve that. You know, my dad passed 7 years ago. You know, we obviously came back from that. We didn't, because my family didn't have the best conflict management skills, it's not like we really discussed that ever again.
Yeah.
But we moved past it. And I wish that my dad was still alive so I could apologize for that. But, you know, I like to think that forgiveness surpasses death sometimes. But
yeah.
That was really hard for me. And when he got sick, so he got sick when I was 26. He told us he had terminal cancer. And I remember thinking immediately, because I went through phases of praying for my dad to be saved. I would go through years of faithfully praying and then years of just, you know, forget it. What's the point? You know, like anything I'm going to do or say matters kind of thing. And I learned pretty quickly that, you know, God is God and God's in control. And we can either participate in the Great Commission, which is what I think is loving your neighbor as yourself and loving God, you know, as you'd want to be loved kind of idea.
Right.
Or we don't have to. You know, and I think I confused that Great Commission with Great Conversion a lot as an adolescent. Like, I remember thinking, if I can convert X amount of people, like, I'm going to have treasures in heaven, you know, like they talk about that VBS.
Yeah.
And I think that started changing for me as I got in my mid to later 20s. But yeah, so when he got sick, I remember saying to God, like, now or never, you know, come on.
Yeah.
And then as he got really sick, and he moved to hospice, and it was really getting towards the end. I remember, it's not, I would say giving up is the wrong word, but surrendering might be a better word.
Mm-hmm.
That God is in control. And I kind of had this moment of, why am I predetermining? If God says he loves his children and he wants his children to be with him, that he'll go to like the greatest lengths to sacrifice his own son, who's also kind of himself, in, you know, when you think about the Trinity, for his kids. Why would I limit God's ability to save my dad post-earthly death or in a death moment? And if he's outside of time and space too, right? Like,
yeah.
Why am I limiting God to seconds or minutes or days or weeks that my dad has left to save him, quote
and
does unquote?
It, and all of this into, taking all of this into account, is it really just my dad just has to say a prayer real quick?
Ain't that the truth? I was just going to get there, Aaron Hale.
Sorry. Why don't you get there?
No. I'm with you. Please interject. Like, exactly.
Yeah.
And not many people that I know have been in the room with somebody when they take their last breath. But, you know, myself and Reed and my sister and her husband and my mom were all with my dad in his last moments. And my dad was in a coma for the last 24, 30 hours of his life before he died. And he had, you know, he didn't necessarily say a conversion prayer, but he put his hands up in the air and closed his eyes and said, I accept Jesus and he accepts me, which is a pretty big thing to say as a Muslim.
Yeah.
And he had the chaplain come to the house for 2 weeks and he asked him to read from the Gospels and talk to him specifically about atonement and these other things.
Wow.
And I remember two weeks before my dad died, you know, at the time I didn't know it was 2 weeks before he was going to die, but we were talking and he was in a lot of physical pain because chemo had just kind of railed his body. And he looked at me and he said, Latifa, I'm really afraid. And I said, well, why are you afraid, Dad? And he goes, because I don't deserve God's mercy and I'm going to die. And, you know, had I been a more eloquent Latifa in that moment, I would have probably, like, just, you know, dumped out the whole gospel story and said it all perfectly kind of thing. And,
yeah.
But I did not do that. I just cried and I just said, Dad, like, none of us deserve God's mercy. You know?
Yeah.
And it was just like a really tender moment.
Yeah.
And I think that, I honestly think that we limit God's power a lot. And we interject ourselves into the role of saver or saving person.
Yeah.
More often than we ever need to. I think we get to participate in God's story, which is pretty exciting, but we're not running the show. We're not writing it, yeah. You know? And So fast forwarding back to when he was like in those moments when he took his last breath, I remember it feeling like time actually slowed down. And I could tell the last breath was coming. There's a way they start breathing that you know this is it.
Yeah.
And he took his last breath and it felt so long. And in that moment, I remember like having this like picture of my dad literally running to God. And my dad was disabled my whole life. I never saw him run in my entire life. Yeah. He walked poorly, but he never ran. And it felt really real, you know?
Yeah.
And I had two large feelings in that moment. The first one was peace, and the second one was anger. And I think the anger came from just losing my dad and realizing that I would not know him as I saw him in that kind of picture right now, you know?
Yeah.
And we had a pretty complicated relationship, but I really loved him. I know he loved me. And my dad was bipolar one and wasn't really treated ever. And so that also plays a lot into like my understanding of God as I'm learning as an adult. But the other feeling, peace, was because why am I limiting God? Like he says he loves us and he's in control, you know?
Yeah.
The night that my dad actually passed, it was about after midnight, and these sweet men in their suits came from the funeral to come to collect the body. And it's really interesting how in a moment he goes from being your dad to the body.
Hmm.
And that's really real. Like you really sense that he's no longer in his body.
Yeah.
And so these very kind, kind men after midnight come and get my dad. And I remember I walked down to the music room. I grew up in this ranch style house, and the music room's at the very opposite end of the house, the bedroom, his bedroom. And I went to the piano and I remember just weeping. And I started playing the minor chords, which are the chords that I play over and over again in Revolution and in Joy. And I remember they wheeled his body out behind me and I didn't turn around to look because I couldn't handle it. And they took him out to the carport. And it was a few minutes later, I just started singing like this song that I'd grown up singing in VBS as a little girl. The I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Where? And there's moments as songwriters, and you know, I'm sure you guys will appreciate this, where you feel like songs are kind of given to you, or this song was written and it literally comes out in the length of the song and it's finished.
Yeah.
And then there's other songs we labor over. Like some of the songs on my Motus Bear record, I wrote the chorus 2 years ago, and I just wasn't ready to write the verse. So I waited 2 years to get a good verse, you know?
Yeah.
And this song happened. It came out as it's sung on the YouTube video for Autumn Film. And so he passed, and then, you know, you have your first year of grieving, which it's like, the first, like, he's not there for all those things kind of experience for
yeah.
a whole year, you know? And it can be, like, dumb stuff, too, where, like, I remember I slammed my leg in the car door, and I usually would, like, call my dad because he would give me empathy and sympathy. He'd be like, oh, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember reaching for the phone to call him and realizing he wouldn't be there when I called, you know? And then there's the big things. Holidays weren't that big of a deal for us because he didn't grow up in America, so American holidays weren't as significant. But, like, big things like when my nieces were born, you know, or when Reed and I got married and he wasn't there, or those kind of things.
Yeah.
And so I think that I struggled with doubt prior to my dad's death differently than I do now. And I think before my dad died, my doubt was more severe in the sense of it was more hinging on, I don't know if God's good or not. I don't know if he's trustworthy or not. And that was really real. And I think a lot of that came from also a more basic understanding of faith on my part, of putting God more in a black and white box of these are the people he loves, these are the people he doesn't care about, and these people go to hell and these people don't, you know?
Yeah.
And now that I'm realizing that God is much larger than I give him credit for and much more powerful, and I do believe that he radically, like, loves his kids, and so he is trying all things to, like, kind of bring them back to himself, I'm less concerned with certain things, you know, and I'm less, I don't know what the right word is. You have to forgive me. I've been having a harder time cognitively the last couple months, but Yeah, I mean, I might as well just say it, but.
Well, I mean, feel free if you want. I know.
Yeah, no, totally.
And we can cut whatever, you know, if you've, you know.
No, it's okay. I thought a lot about it when you texted me yesterday. But I really don't want to be emotional. First girl on the show and she cries on this.
Oh, I cried yesterday, so.
Yeah.
You know, I found out a month ago that I have a tumor in my brain. And they don't think it's going to, like, kill me right now, so I don't want to make it more dramatic than it needs to be. But it's real, and it's there. And I got an MRI because they were looking for something else scary, and they didn't see that. But, like, it wasn't even occurring to me that there would be, like, a secret option C of, like, another tumor in the center of my head. But it helps explain why I'm having a harder time, you know, finding my words and being quicker and headaches and lack of sleep and all that stuff. But it's been interesting, like, thinking about, you know, God's goodness with this stuff. And the other thing that's been a little challenging, I've lost some of my hearing in my left ear. And that's the whole reason why we went in looking for something in the first place. I started noticing some auditory symptoms in the winter. And as a working musician and as somebody who just, like, engineered 90% of her own record and, you know, would love to get into mixing one day, that's, like, really scary to lose some of your hearing. And
yeah.
The good news is the ear doctor I just talked to thinks that there's a real possibility that it's Meniere's disease and that I'll be able to get my hearing back. And that's the first doctor that's told me that. So there's some hope.
Yeah.
I would say cautious, resigned hope, but there's some hope. And it's not dramatic. I can still hear in my left ear. It's just not as accurate as my right. So I can still work for all those people out there. Seeing as it's my livelihood and I love it, like, I'm not giving up, but I just finished my record. And if it turns out good, you can trust that I can still work. But, you know, I'm currently dealing with some heavy things, my health, and it's been a real challenge. But, you know, I'm glad I'm doing it now and I'm not doing it when I was 23. Because I think if I was 23, this would send me into a catapult of, like, F you, God. What the heck? Why don't you care about me? You know?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, what I've realized with my dad and even now, as I'm not feeling good, you know, like, I've never had headaches before and I've started getting migraines in the last few months, you know, they last like 4 days and it's like, what?
Oh, wow.
I like literally never had headaches. Like, I was describing my symptoms to Reed in the spring. I'm like, what is this thing? You know? And Reed's like, that sounds like a headache. And I'm like, don't minimize it. You know, like, it has to be more than that. But
I bet it is, though. For 4 days, and a migraine is much worse than just a regular headache.
But anyways, as I was saying, I thought a lot about pretty intently the last month as I've been learning more and more about what's going on with my body and what's inside my body. It's not like I don't know if I'm going to be okay. I've had a few people tell me, I was praying and I just got this sense that you're going to be okay, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just say, oh, thank you, you know. Yeah. But the reality is we don't know. Yeah. Like, God didn't promise me a tumor-free brain or perfect ears for the rest of my life because I make music or because I make worship music, right?
Mm-hmm.
He never promised me those things. He promised me strength and courage. He promised me peace, you know, if I, like, he can grant me those things and comfort. He's promised me that I don't have to be separated from him. But in that, nowhere has it been declared that I get all these other things because of that. Like, somehow I inserted health wealth myself for a long time, even though I would never say that I believe that theology, you know, intellectually. And so when people tell me, oh, you're going to be okay, I appreciate the sentiment. But I think you're saying that because it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
Because it bugs you out to think that I might not be okay, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm glad it bums you out. Like, I don't want you to, like, be indifferent to my death or life, but...
Yeah.
But we don't know. And does it make God any less good? No. Is that hard to say? Yes. Do I always wrestle with that? Yes.
Yeah.
So I've just been learning a lot that I take my circumstances and tether them to who God is more than I'd like. And I think that has a lot to do with my ability to trust him or believe his character as good and loving and just. I just started reading the news again in the last 6 months because I said, you know what, I need to understand what's going on in the Middle East more. I have family in Yemen, you know, and then like you start reading the news about everything and then like all this stuff, like the world is really, there's a lot of horrible things happening continuously every day. You know, there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of suffering. And it's really, that's been the other piece for me that's been hard, you know, the last year is being like, where are you, God? You know?
Yeah.
There's horrible things happening. Horrible things. And
a lot of people hurting.
Yeah. And honestly, like my tumor and me losing a little bit of my hearing, it really, and I can say this because my body, like it feels like it pales in comparison to a lot of the stuff that the world suffers and goes through. So I'm not saying that I'm not allowed to be upset about it, but I'm just saying, you know, when I have perspective, there's a lot worse things happening all the time. And so I think that like doubting God's justice can be really hard too when you start looking at what's going on in the world. But then you're realizing, well, it's not God that pulled that trigger in South Carolina. It was like a horrible person.
Yeah.
You know, because I believe that those people, even though they're extending forgiveness and I believe it's genuine, I mean, they have to be angry. They have to be wrestling with all the spectrum of feelings.
Sure.
But, you know, but they chose to verbalize forgiveness. And that's really powerful.
Yeah.
It doesn't minimize the other stuff they're feeling, but it's really powerful that the one that chose to verbalize was forgiveness. It's like when I'm having a fight with Reed, I have a whole spectrum of feelings just in the 20-minute fight, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here upset with somebody that I deeply love, you know, but I can also feel like I deeply hate in the same moment, you know? and then at the end of it all, we continue to choose love and forgiveness towards each other, even though there's things we do to hurt each other.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's honestly what this whole Motosphere record's about. It's about that cycle. And that cycle's real. And like, as we grow, we hope that those cycles, you know, become less and less. But the reality is like, we're always going to do it. We can improve, we can grow, but there's certain things about us that are broken. And I believe God will redeem them, but his timing is so different than ours.
Yeah. I was actually having that same kind of conversation with my wife a little while ago. We were talking about when we went through the adoption process and we had to figure out a way to get a bunch of money, you know, and we had never saved ever, you know, saved for anything. And so it was like completely new experience. And I think I maybe talked about this last week, but you know, we started like, we were like, okay, we believe that this is something God has called us to. So we're going to like go gung ho, you know, we're going to tithe more than we ever have. And we want to see him provide, you know? And then it was like, and it was amazing to watch because part of the reason we were like that way, you know, if ever in the future we are in the same situation where we have to trust, we can say, remember how he did this, you know? Yeah. And then we went through the whole adoption process, 2 years, our son came home. God was, you know, totally, totally provided for us the whole way through. And then a year later we have financial problems and we're freaked out. And it's like, how
is that the truth?
We already forgot. I mean, we were thinking this was going to last us forever.
If there's one thing that like the Bible does clarify for me is that human beings are the worst. We forget constantly.
I think we're going to make some Sons and Doubters t-shirts that just say human beings are the worst. Because that's like the third time we've had it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying though? Like God's people, they literally, like I would have given anything to see miracles, like to see pillars of fire and to see like manna, like to see like this Red Sea parted, like all that stuff. Like that is crazy. Like I would love to see that. And what history tells me is if I saw it, I would still forget.
Yeah.
You know, I would still like make my golden calf and be like, oh, I'm going to worship you because I can see you and you're right in front of me and this feels easier. You know, but you know, our golden calves are different stuff. You know, there are finances.
Yeah.
There are security that we make for ourselves. There are like TV series that we digest in 3 days that we should watch over 6 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We make our own golden calves. It's food or it's clothes or it's, you know, it's as artists, it can be our artist identity, you know?
Yeah.
it can be hinged on how many people bought our last record or how good our artistry is or how good it's perceived by our peers or any of that stuff. Like if we tether our identity to anything else, like, man, we're going to suffer for it. And that's true. You know, I don't know. I've just had a lot more time to be by myself. And, you know, I've also been editing my records. I've just had weeks by myself, you know, editing. And then I go sit outside and think to myself and come back in. And I'm an extrovert and I love people. So this is like the most alone time I probably have ever had in my life, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I say there's something really real that I've just, something that's come over me in the sense of I have felt entitled to things that God never promised me. And that's messed up my faith.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like that. You know?
Yeah.
I want to be somebody who's grateful. Like, I think that as you get older, you either become more grateful or more bitter. And I think that has a lot to do with entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be grateful. Like, I want to be one of those old ladies that, like, people might say she's crazy or whatever, but, isn't she awesome? Like, she's totally, really, like, still, like, so positive and so grateful. And I'm not saying there's not room to be upset and depressed and negative. I'm an artist. I like to have all those feelings. I get a lot of songs from those. But
sure, it's just, like, yeah.
I don't want to be a bitter person. And I think a lot of that has to do with what we believe we got or earned or what we're supposed to get.
And how much Fox News we watch.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll cut that.
I watch zero, so I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
So what I think is interesting about joy, and I think it's kind of what you guys are trying to do with the space of your podcast, is creating that space of the tension of those moments where we fully realize the brokenness of the world around us, but simultaneously fully accept God's goodness and peace. And there's a lot of tension in that. And that's a really hard space. Like, a lot of people don't like to sit and live in tension because it's really uncomfortable. And it's really hard to reconcile how both things coexist. And I think that's part of the reality. It's hard for us because we are limited intellectual, spiritual beings right now. I read a book last year by Brené Brown, and I really admire her writing. And she is a great thinker. She says in her book, the opposite of joy isn't grief, it's fear.
Mm.
And I think I confused that for a long time. And so when I wrote Joy, you know, 7 years ago, it was me emotionally saying the opposite of joy can't be grief, you know?
Yeah.
And it took like years later of me reading that book for Brené to clarify that feeling for me. But
Tifa, so one of the things that, you know, Aaron kind of mentioned this at the top of the episode, that the reason why we really do this is because we want to, just like you were saying, to kind of create that space for people to deal honestly with these things. And so we're trusting that there are people listening who are kind of in the throes of hard times right now. And maybe not even hard times, you know, hard circumstances, but just really struggling to continue in faith and to believe and to know what to believe. And so what would you have to say to them?
The first thing I would say is I'm just really sorry, and I know you're really hurting and your pain is real and your confusion is real, and it comes from something that is most likely been very hard and painful for you. And so on some level, I just have to acknowledge the grief and the pain and the suffering first and say you're not crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I actually just tattooed this on my body, but
you're not crazy.
You're not crazy. the most repeated commandment in scriptures is do not fear, for I am with you. And I think that the reason God said that a lot is because he knew that and knows that we need to hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And I think there's two components to that. The idea of do not be afraid, which is the flip side of that, is don't be afraid because, like, I'm with you. You're not alone.
Yeah.
And I think that grief and pain and suffering and doubt can feel incredibly isolating. And I think it's easy to start to think and believe that you really are alone. And so therefore, after that, the feelings of despair and hopelessness, which is basically giving way to fear, are a lot easier. And so I would just remind you, even though I know you might be physically alone right now, you're not alone. And even in your weakest moments, if you can find even just one person to even call or text or email and say, I'm feeling alone, I'm feeling isolated, or I'm feeling afraid, or I'm just hurting, I'm confused. Like finding a safe person or people to explore those feelings with, I think can be really life-changing. It's been life-changing for me in my process. The people that didn't give up on me, the people that I can still call and say, I don't know if I'm a Christian because X, Y, and Z, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of responding with fear or judgment, they laugh at me and love me and listen to me and then remind me of the true things. Not like the futile true things, but the big true things about who God is. And just say to me, you're not alone. I love you. Try not to despair. It's totally appropriate to grieve, but try not to despair. Those are the moments that have been life-changing for me. And so I would just, that's what I would say to the people that are listening, that are wrestling, and just telling you too, that you're really normal.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously I'm super normal. So I wrestle. But like, yeah. You're not a freak. You're not a weirdo. And also like, you're not like a pariah of faith if you have questions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a worship leader. I've made like 10 worship records and like, I have tons of questions. I still do.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the things I would say.
Lativa, thank you so much for your time today and just your kind of honesty and vulnerability, your willingness to talk about some of this stuff.
All right, guys. I love talking with you. I actually really love doing podcasts. If you ever want to have me back, maybe I'll be smarter.
No, we will never have you back. No,
terrible.
I do think that you should start your own podcast and,
Maybe I'll call my podcast Tumor Time.
Tumor Time with Tifa?
Tumor Time with Tifa.
Yeah.
And the instruments would be like, Tumor Time.
Here's Tifa.
Hey, everybody. It's your girl Tifa and her tumor, Tammy. Yeah. Tammy's the worst. She always says the wrong thing.
Oh my goodness.
That's Tammy talking again. That would be, I would subscribe.
Like, oh, I'm not ready to laugh about that yet. It's uncomfortable.
I would subscribe to that immediately.
One thing we'd love to get to though, before we hang up, if you can tell folks where they can find you online.
Oh yeah, that's great. So you can find me at latifaphillips.com and that sends you to Page Six VI, The Autumn Film, Solo Me, or Moda Spira, which are all the musical projects I've been a part of. And it will also tell you all the artists I've worked with and the records I've worked on with them, if you're curious about that.
And if you're listening on an iPhone, you can just tap the logo for Sons and Doubters, and it will pull up a link to latifaphillips.com and take you straight there. So
perfect. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you so much, Latifa. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, it was great to talk to you guys.
All right. See you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
This episode of Sons and Doubters is sponsored in part by Nice Custom Goods. Nice Custom Goods are made by hand by one man in one workshop in South Houston, Texas. The things we do should last, and that includes the things we buy. So buy something you can pass down. Check out www.nicecustomgoods.com and follow them on Instagram at Nice Custom Goods. Now, back to our show. You know, there was a piece of that when she talked about being at VBS when she's 5 years old and having this real conversion experience and coming to believe the gospel, and then immediately asking like, okay, well, if God made me and God made Jesus, then who made God? And the response that she received was, well, we don't ask those kind of questions here. And I just think that's so interesting. I think it's exactly the thing that we keep talking about on the show, is that the church should be the place where we ask those questions, because mm-hmm. if not there, then where? Mm-hmm. Those questions exist, and mm-hmm. they need to be dealt with and wrestled with in a healthy way. And man, why not the church? I just don't understand mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, and why is it so bad to say, I don't know?
Exactly, which we, you know, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago with John Hatfield, just this idea of just being comfortable with mystery.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to pursue truth. It's good to pursue truth, but mm-hmm. to do that with the understanding that, like, I cannot expect to understand the infinite
mm-hmm.
in my very finite mind.
Yeah.
Man, I just thought she was really, really great.
She was great. Just the story with her dad was really compelling to me. I was thinking about like being a senior in high school and your dad asking you,
yeah.
you know, oh, so you think I'm going to go to hell? If I look back at my faith as a when I was a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been really hard for me to, I can't imagine how hard that would be to answer, especially to your own dad.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what really moved me was that just even at the end of the conversation, like what encouragement she gave, you know?
Yeah.
I was really moved at the idea of like thinking about somebody out there that's listening that is going through grief and is going through a really tough time right now.
Yeah.
And number one, it just made me glad that we're doing this. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And then the other idea is like, man, if you are out there and you are listening to this, like, I'm really sorry too. Like, I'm really sorry that you're in the middle of this, because I know I've been there to some degree, and it's scary and it's hard.
Yeah. Well, and when she talked about the Brené Brown quote, that the opposite of joy is not grief, the opposite of joy is fear. There was something really beautiful about that and connecting that to her song, Joy.
Yeah.
And just knowing kind of that story of her experiencing and realizing that, I guess, on her own without that language, but just experiencing in that moment, like being truly deeply sad.
Yeah.
And truly deeply joyful at the same time. There's something really beautiful about
that. Yeah, and there's something really just true, you know, about that. I mean, I think we've all been there. I think that's why that song speaks to me and it speaks to so many people, is because I think we've all kind of been in that situation, or maybe not that exact situation, but we maybe resonate with it on some level.
Yeah. So we want to share that song with you guys right now. This is Paige CXVI's version of Joy.
I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart. And I'm so happy, so happy, so very happy. And I'm so happy, so happy, so very happy. Thank you.
Sons and Doubters is brought to you by Milieu Media Group.
This episode was produced by Luke Bronner and Aaron Hale, with production assistance from Nick Willard.
The theme music was composed and produced by Derek Webb.
Artwork was designed by the illustrious Heather Hale.
Now, here are a few scenes from episode 4 featuring Derek Webb.
I feel like I came into the church or into church culture very much like I came into the kingdom to start with, kicking and screaming. If I have provided any kind of agitation for the church as an institution, it stems out of my primarily agitating myself. It's because these are the things that I deal with or struggle with. There's this great John Lennon quote where he was asked, you know, what is it with you and this idea of peace? Why is that so important to you? And his response was, because I know myself to be such a violent man. And I think that that is not a bad anecdote for how I got where I am.